Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Tsinis.
Kayla Tsinis. I'm Kayla Tsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
It suddenly got quiet. Maybe something's going to actually start. The lighting just got darker. They're showing a movie.
Europe is its people, and people are at the core of the European People's Party. We listen to them. We act on their behalf. From the smallest village to the largest city.
Anyone who follows politics probably knows a thing or two about good old political party conventions. Where I come from in the U.S., they're highly theatrical, highly ideological, multi-day jamborees of like-minded activists and big speeches.
Ladies and gentlemen, leaders and fighters for freedom and liberty and the American dream, the best is yet to come.
But what about in the EU? What's it like to be at one of these conventions for a collection of parties from around the continent, speaking multiple languages, coming together for the sake of the European Parliament election? I'm Sarah Wheaton, and this week, on an extended episode of EU Confidential, we're taking you inside the European People's Party Congress. We've talked to dozens of the EPP's top officials and members, bringing you the inside take on what the heck actually happens.
A very round number, 400 yes, 89 no, and that means that is elected, resoundingly, Ursula von der Leyen. Congratulations.
Whether or not people are enthusiastic about their chosen leader, Ursula von der Leyen.
I think she's a true leader. She thinks like one, she acts like one.
There are some in EPP and some in CDU that are not completely convinced, but if you look at the alternatives.
It's difficult now to ask us to support this candidacy because she did the contrary in France. Huh?
And where the party goes from here.
I mean, one of the reasons why so many drafts of my manifesto leaked to Politico and other sources in Brussels and elsewhere was the fact that we were open about it and we really debated and engaged about our positions.
So buckle up, it's going to be a wild ride. Well, at least by European standards.
Welcome to the EPP Congress 2024.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome aboard. We are ready for departure. Quickly seated and fasten your seatbelt. From now on, you sign into flight mode on mobile phones and electronic devices.
I'm on a packed plane heading to Bucharest. The Romanian capital was selected to host the two-day congress where Europe's conservative power players converge. I just got off of a sweltering flight, 40 minutes late. Maybe sweltering due to all of the political heavyweights that were on the flight. As soon as I walked on, I see in first class European Parliament President Roberta Metsola. And then I walk into coach and there is none other than Commissioner Margarita Skinas, who really wanted to make the point that he was sitting in coach. Yeah, kind of an interesting situation. I was sitting next to some of the few like actual Romanians on the flight, and they didn't really know that they were sitting amongst all of these power players. You know, one of them said that she was coming back to Romania. She lives in Belgium, but she was coming back to Romania to take care of her mom. She said maybe she would recognize von der Leyen, but not really the other people. But she was happy that there were so many VIPs on the flight, because she said usually when you get back this late to the Bucharest airport, they just kind of dump you off in the middle of the airfield, make you get on a bus. But this time we rolled up right to the regular jetway. So yeah, we all have an early morning and this flight is late. So I'm going to get ready to go to bed. Day one, the manifesto. If tomorrow is all about Ursula von der Leyen's coronation, today, in theory, is supposed to be all about the issues. As the Congress kicks into gear, it's clear that there's one big ticket item on the agenda, the adoption of the party manifesto. Basically, what does the European People's Party, or EPP for short, actually stand for in this election? So I'm here at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Bucharest. The EPP Congress is in this place called Rome Expo. I actually haven't been there yet, but it's, I assume, a huge conference center, and we're sort of on the outskirts of the city. It's an extremely gray and dreary day. I feel like we're in some sort of Iron Curtain movie. But anyway, I'm here at the Crown Plaza, which is a very fancy hotel. It's kind of a satellite location for the conference. I'm about to interview Thanasis Bakolis. Thanasis Bakolis is the EPP's Secretary General and an advisor to Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis. It's Bakolis' job to keep Europe's center-right party more or less on the same page. This Congress is basically his main event. When we first met in person, you told me you cut your teeth campaigning, working for a Democrat in the United States.
Yeah, that's where I learned the business. And it's amazing, you know, because it was a different era where centrism in American politics prevailed. I mean, this proverbial reaching across the aisle was real. You know, in Europe, it's reaching across the many aisles. It's much more difficult to do. You get lost sometimes in your effort to reach consensus.
So you're saying just reaching the consensus becomes more important than something else?
Becomes more important than leadership. Becomes more important than showing the direction. Because you got to know where you're going. You got to go through elections, this process where it's not about consensus, but it's all about positioning yourself and talking about your policies and talking about what you think is right versus what you think is wrong. So the people can decide, right? So you can have some kind of indication of where you want things to go. Now, in Europe, we have this indication. I have 12 leaders sitting at the council, maybe 13 if we win Portugal next weekend. But what's more important is the strength and quality of EPP leadership around Europe. The other parties have one attack line. I mean, it's the same thing. Oh, you know, don't vote for the EPP because, you know, the far right is coming and they're in cohorts with them. But the reality is so much different. The only political force around Europe that it's a real barrier to the far right is EPP parties. I mean, look what happened in Greece. Mitsotakis and Nea Dimokratia destroyed the neo-Nazis. Look at what happened in Poland. You know, what is the left doing?
So Bakolis is touching on one of the main areas where the EPP is on the defensive this cycle. The EU's other biggest parties to their political left say that the EPP will choose to work with or align themselves with far-right forces, and therefore that a vote for the EPP is a vote for more extremist policies coming from Brussels. Some EPP-linked parties are already governing with far-right and populist parties in some parts of Europe, like Finland and Italy. But the EPP argues that they're actually the most effective bulwark against the far-right, and that they'll remain steadfastly pro-European, anti-Russia, and dedicated to the rule of law.
Some people say that these types of congresses or conventions are just sort of a lot of choreography, a lot of speechifying. You know, what's happening behind the scenes to help move this European campaign forward?
We're here, we're in Bucharest to do things. First of all, formally embrace our manifesto. And our manifesto was a process that was very open this year, very transparent. We heard from society, of course, but we also duked it out amongst ourselves and did so in public. I mean, one of the reasons why so many drafts of my manifesto leaked to political and other sources in Brussels and elsewhere was the fact that we were open about it and we really debated and engaged about our positions, because it's policies. It's what policies do you give people? Because the other political parties, especially the socialists, but also the liberals, you know, they're all about labels and identity politics. We're good. They're bad. People don't buy this anymore. They want to hear you out. They want to hear what direction you want to take this union and why.
For people who were not following all of the leaks, what were the most contentious elements of the manifesto?
What was difficult about this process is that, I mean, you had, I don't know, 50 parties, right? We began by addressing all the tough issues: security, defense, migration, QMV.
Qualified majority voting,
yeah,
QMV.
Green Deal. And, you know, things are not the same. You know, we're a big tent. In our tent, we have liberals and centrists and center-right, Christian Democrats and conservatives. Politics are different in the North than they are in the South. All of these elements had to come together. You know, we didn't try to find compromise. We didn't try to water it down.
I'm asking you for example, not because I'm trying to, you know, muckrake or anything, but just because I am having trouble understanding kind of concretely what you mean and how this specific positions in the manifesto manifest as leadership.
Well, to qualified majority voting, we all understand the problems that Viktor Orban caused at the council level. And we all understand the need for Europe to be more assertive, more decisive, more forward-looking when it comes to defense. So what our manifesto says is yes to QMV, but in very specific instances, when it comes to putting sanction to authoritarians and dictators on foreign policy, that's where we agree. There were member parties who were much more forward-looking in terms of QMV, and there are parties who are not so willing to embrace it. But we found a common ground as a political party.
Ah, Brussels and the joys of covering European politics. One of the big controversies Bacolas and his party are consumed by, at least in this case, involves the way politics is done in Brussels. I mean, yeah, it's important, but super hard to connect to people's daily lives. But the whole point of today is for the EPP to lay out its manifesto. We're expecting to hear much more about that later in the day.
You also talked about the different countries where the EPP family has sort of been fundamental to defeating the far right, but there are also countries in the EU where you're in a coalition with the far right. So at this point, would you say that the EPP is a centrist party or is it a conservative party?
The EPP right now is the core of European centrism, given the fact that the socialists and the liberals are leaning far, far, far to the left. I'm calling on my friends, the socialists and the liberals, to be more constructive, because we have to work with them the day after. We have to work with them because the majority that's going to be formed after the elections is obviously a majority led by the EPP in the European Parliament. But we need to work with the socialists. We need to work with the liberals. Why? Because we need to form a majority that is pro-Europe, pro-rule of law, pro-NATO, and pro-Ukraine. So my call is, let's talk about policies. Let's debate it. Let's talk about our differences openly. And let's go to elections. Let's not play identity politics. Let's not repeat the mistakes that are happening across the Atlantic. Let's be substantive. Identity politics has no room in Europe.
So I just wrapped up my interview with Thanasis Bakolis. Now I'm roaming free for a few minutes here in the Crown Plaza, which is where all the leaders are staying. My interview with him took place on the third floor of the Crown Plaza, where we passed a bunch of guys in suits standing up very straight, and that's because President von der Leyen is also staying on that floor. How the mighty have fallen. I have just gone from the opulent corridors of the Crown Plaza to the press filing center of the Rome Expo. There is no coffee, and I noticed porta potties on my way in. But yeah, it's gonna be a long 2 days. I ventured back down to the main action on the conference floor, where the opening speeches were about to begin. I wanted to get a sense of how people gathered here were thinking about what's important to the party heading into the election. I quickly bumped into Maria Gabriel, a somewhat familiar face for keen Brussels bubble dwellers. She was a member of the European Parliament and then served as an EU commissioner and is now deputy prime minister and chief diplomat for her native Bulgaria. What are you going to be looking for from the Congress to consider a success?
Well, of course, first to elect with big support our Spitzenkandidat. Mm-hmm. Of course, after to define very clearly the main lines of our manifesto, and that should be an EPP that is taking care of the concerns of our citizens, that is putting Europe in the lead, and at the same time that will continue to fight for security, to build peace, and of course, always to think about the diversity that we have in our regions and in Europe, because that's one of our main strengths.
Yeah, how would that be reflected? What's an example of the diversity issue? Is there a policy point? Or?
Absolutely, to take, for example, better the concerns of our regions, because we need to think not also about the capitals, but all in rural areas, we have remote areas, and we need really to give them much more flexibility, to be adapted to the reality, because we have main ambition like the Green Deal or the digitalization, but every single region can catch the pace in a different way if we take in a better way their concerns.
I welcome all colleagues to the EPP Congress 2024.
Finally, it starts. The speechifying begins.
And as I look into this room...
And kicking things off is Manfred Weber, president of the European People's Party. That is
you. Dear friends, you probably don't know, but... Last week on Saturday, the socialists had their Congress in Rome. That room was quite different to the room we have here in Bucharest. We have here in Bucharest a manifesto with very concrete proposals. They have ideological claims and vague formulas for the future. We have Ursula von der Leyen and Roberta Metsola. They have Schmidt and Borrell as the leaders of the socialists. We have got a room full of passionate delegates, and we struggle to fit all journalists into this room, dear friends, and they haven't even made news outside of the Brussels bubble. Dear friends, here in Bucharest, you can see the powerhouse of Europe, and we are proud about this. Our
Congress. And eventually, the Congress got down to brass tacks and voted, I say in gentle air quotes, on each section of its manifesto before adopting the whole document.
Let's invite upon the stage to discuss the manifesto. The president of the EPP, Manfred Weber, will join me on stage.
Good to see you.
How crucial procedure of crafting the manifesto in a sort of collaborative form was for you?
Well, I think that manifesto is probably one of the most important decisions for the Congress. We define the roadmap for the next 5 years for the future of Europe.
So we heard some of the priorities of the citizens there. How do they match with the EPP's priorities?
Two challenges are in front of us. One is to keep the promise of peace, at least inside of the European Union. We have war in Ukraine, but at least inside of the European Union, we want to keep peace. And the second key promise is to keep prosperity, so economic perspective for our citizens. That are the two main pillars of our programmatic approach.
And fair to say, no room for empty slogans, then, it sounds like you're saying.
Yes, that's correct. When we see the programmatic approach of our competitors, I would say that there is a lot of slogans. When you see our approach, it's not about empty messages. It's about real content.
Now we are coming to the decision process. I bring it now to the vote. And as president, I do this by myself because I want to give really this document importance. It gives us a roadmap for the next 5 years. So those who are in favor, please show up. So those who are voting against the manifesto, please now. There is nobody opposing to the concept of our manifesto. Then it's unanimously approved. Thank you so much for this.
At one point, I slipped out of the main hall and ran into another EPP insider. Dara Murphy is a former politician from Ireland who ran the Spitzenkandidat campaign in 2019.
Yes, so this is the, I suppose this is the beginning now. This, you know, we had the Socialists had their event in Rome, and now EPP are here, and it's going to start becoming much more fun now. European politics is all about, you know, people working together, coalition. But I think once the congresses start, the convergence ends and the divergence begins. And I think you will hear a lot of senior European People's Party figures now calling out a lot of the weaknesses that you see from the Socialists, particularly, you know, when we talk about global geopolitical issues outside of our borders. And I think this is where Europe needs to step up and be strong, especially given that we don't know what's going to happen across the Atlantic in the United States.
How much attention are real people paying at this point? None.
And no one expects, I don't want to call them real people, but this is, I suppose, the engine of the political families coming together, agreeing the manifestos, people ramping up for the battle. I was involved in the campaign 5 years ago, the 2019, and the reality is European elections are about 3 to 4 weeks from polling. So that's the start of May. But that's fine. The parties now are preparing their messaging, preparing the visits and the tours of the candidates, you know, talking about slogans, manifestos. So the people, I think, have enough. If they have 4 weeks of campaigning, to give them 4 months would be too much torture.
Mm-hmm. And we're having this Congress, you know, right after Super Tuesday in the U.S., yeah, where Trump seems to have solidified his candidacy. Is that a factor that's affecting the way people approach things here?
No, I think everyone expects Trump to be the candidate for the Republicans, so that there's no real surprise there. Maybe a little bit of a surprise about how emphatic it has been. But I do think there is a strong desire to do two things. One is to make sure that the relationship between the European Union and the United States is as strong as possible, irrespective of who's president. But equally to accept that even some of the messaging from Trump isn't without some rationale. Europe needs to do more itself to protect ourselves, but also to protect our neighbours and our neighbourhood. And that is something that I think, I mentioned the Socialist Congress in Rome, they don't seem to want to talk about it, but here at the EPP we do, and we understand Europe has to do more, and I think we'll do more.
Well, thank you very much. They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This
is a big... Sometimes it felt like Trump solidifying his candidacy was as important as von der Leyen nailing down hers. My Politico colleague Eddie Wax is also here with me in Bucharest, and he ran into EPP President Manfred Weber after his speech to chew the fat on how his party is preparing for a possible second Trump presidency.
Hi. Weber.
Good to see you. Hello.
He's already tracking us down.
Very good.
You work with us.
Okay,
with
us.
Which way are we going? This way? I wanted to ask you a question about Donald Trump, because it seems inevitable that he will be the candidate now for the Republicans. Should that be worrying Europe in any way, in terms of defense, in terms of the war in Ukraine?
Well, we are depending on the security aspects fully on America. That's why all the decisions there have a big impact. What we saw in the first mandate of Donald Trump is not promising in regard to security questions. I respect fully the American democratic outcome. But the main message is now we have to defend ourselves. We have to be so strong that Putin is not wasting any thought of attacking us.
Yeah. Doesn't that mean that people will say that Trump's winning the argument in some ways? Because people always interpret Trump's arguments as being a bit of an empty threat. You know, he's clever and he actually wants us to invest more in NATO. Do you believe that?
Well, 330 million Americans will not permanently defend 440 million Europeans. That is what I get, and that is what I understand as well. So we have to wake up from our dream after the fall of the Berlin Wall, that there is no threat, no problem anymore. So we Europeans have to wake up. And we have to tell this in a way that we can do it. So the people are concerned, really. The people, when you are out in the streets, when you talk with people, people are concerned about the security question, about possible war in Europe. That's why our message as EPP is not that we want to talk about weapons. Our main message is we talk about peace. And to keep peace, we have to be strong. That is the message of today.
Thank you very much.
Over the course of the day, it remained clear that security and defense were top of mind for many.
There is no coincidence that dictators and autocrats all over the globe, from Belarus to Iran and North Korea, are closely watching and analyzing our actions, decisiveness, and solidarity, or sometimes lack of both.
But this is Lithuanian Prime Minister Ingrida Šimonytė.
Let's make aggressors pay. Let's move further and faster with stronger sanctions. There should be no taboos for military weapons and systems. No self-imposed red lines anymore. Peace through strength.
As day one drew to a close, all that talk of defense and security and farmers and all of the winning topics that would surely propel the EPP to victory, that was slowly replaced by upbeat dance music and mingling around buffet spreads.
So Eddie, we're both already very tired. Yeah. We're towards the end of day one. We're trying to muster the energy to maybe go out to dinner downtown when we're actually quite on the outskirts. But before we even get to today, I want to take you back to the weekend in Rome instead of Romania. You're at the Party of European Socialist Congress in Rome. And what was the scene like there?
It was definitely a cozier, smaller affair, I'd say. There was a different location. I mean, it was all being hosted kind of by the Italian Democratic Party. Here, I think the difference in the locations is that here it feels a lot more corporate. It feels a lot more like a kind of Oscars award ceremony. There's a massive screen on the stage. It's all very extremely highly kind of produced, and it's all very slick, whereas it was a bit more fuzzy and a bit more kind of homely and family style with the socialists. That's how I would kind of describe it. They hadn't programmed as much kind of activities, whereas here we've had this whole preamble and we've had von der Leyen holding 10-minute kind of what someone described it to me as a sort of EPP speed dating, which is a slightly odd notion. But, you know, so the people are really using their time here to kind of meet each other, to have lots of bilaterals. I met the Prime Minister of Finland, and he said he had 8 bilaterals with other leaders.
One thing that both of these congresses really have in common is that they're meant to be these projections of unity. They were nominating a Spitzenkandidat, a lead candidate who was not challenged by anybody else. So it wasn't really a real contest. And so how did you see that play out in Rome with Nicholas Schmidt?
There were a few really big speeches. So I think that you could see that what the leaders focused on was different. I mean, Mette Frederiksen gave a speech, the Prime Minister of Denmark, a speech that was dominated by big kind of geopolitical intent.
Once again, war is back on our soil. Putin is not merely attacking Ukraine. He is attacking the entire rule-based international order.
She really set out her stall. She talked about the need for Europe to kind of get real, up its cooperation on things like security. We need to provide more arms to Ukraine. You know, she's been one of the people leading on that, or Denmark certainly has. And she kind of quickly endorsed Nicholas Schmidt at the beginning of her speech in a sort of 15-second thing, and then moved on to that, and really didn't talk about migration until right at the end, because that's a topic where she's seen as much more being on the right compared to other kind of socialist or social democrat leaders. So if you compare her speech to what Pedro Sanchez talked about, which was very much like the bogeyman of the far right is here and we've got to stamp it out and we've always been proven right, or what Nicholas Schmidt talked about, which was he talked about Israel and, you know, condemning Netanyahu's government for its actions in Gaza.
What is happening in Gaza is a humanitarian tragedy. We cannot turn a blind eye to the level of violence and destruction for which civilians pay the highest price. And we can never accept collective punishment as an answer.
It was interesting to kind of compare and contrast the different leaders' speeches, certainly. And then really sort of the final point just to make is that Olaf Scholz's speech really landed with a thud. He gave a very, very dull speech, skirted around anything controversial, and really just was quite robotic. So it was a bit of a letdown, really.
As social democrats, we are united in certainty that we can shape a better future. Let us fight for our vision of a fair and peaceful future. A future that lies in a united Europe. Grazie mille.
You just made me kind of think of an interesting point. That's it's a big difference between these two political families. So the socialists or the social democrats maybe don't have as many national leaders, but the ones that they have are very prominent. Pedro Sanchez, Olaf Scholz. Whereas the EPP is very proud that they have 12 prime ministers here. They're all kind of more from like medium and small countries. So von der Leyen really kind of is the most prominent conservative in Europe.
Yes and no. I agree with you to an extent. She has governed or she has led the European Commission not so much as a conservative. I mean, now she's definitely telling everybody around this Congress and holding these 10-minute meetings in which she's really sort of flaunting her conservative credentials very kind of brazenly now. But actually, you know, she's led a coalition of commissioners who were elected in 2000 or who were nominated in 2019 by governments that were, you know, that were in place at the time. And that after those European elections, there'd been a green wave. The socialists were still, you know, stronger than they're expected to be after these elections. And, you know, it's true that EPP didn't have so many prime ministers. So it's funny how she's had to kind of shapeshift and she's had to kind of reinvent herself at this Congress. And this is kind of the moment that she kind of bursts out of her old skin and becomes this new commission president, von der Leyen 2.0, who is going to be more true to what those kind of conservative values that maybe we can say all along she's always kind of had that inside her. That's what people want us to believe. But I think she's just a pure politician. She's shrewd and she kind of blows wherever the wind blows. She can kind of be a bit of a chameleon.
Today we did see the unanimous adoption of the EPP's manifesto, and several leaks kind of came out in advance, and the thing that just everybody has been talking about is how in many ways it dials back a lot of the things that she was trying to do. It really kind of puts the brakes on the Green Deal. And Manfred Weber, in a press conference today, when he was asked about one of the more controversial migration parts, he was like, nope, von der Leyen 100% backs this document.
So. Yeah. I don't think that's surprising, because I think that this document is not something that's just going to land on her desk, and it's not like Manfred Weber, certainly, or any kind of prime minister is going to be dictating to her directly how she should be leading the European Commission. Of course, they do sort of point her in certain directions and steer her. I would say that this manifesto, which focuses a lot more on things like immigration, on security, on defence, rather than, you know, climate change, and ultimately it's a manifesto. We all know what politicians do with manifestos once the elections are over, but I still do think that it's helpful as a kind of, it shows us which way the wind is blowing.
Eddie, you have not been in the conference center all day. You actually were out and about a bit in the morning. What did you see?
Yeah, this morning I went through the very traffic-clogged streets of Bucharest to get to the National Opera House, which instead of being filled with music was instead being used as a kind of get-out-the-vote campaign event by Roberta Metsola, the president of the European Parliament. The whole place was packed. I didn't even get a seat. I had to sit on the stairs. And Roberta Metsola was kind of having a Q&A with students, but also kids as young as sort of 15, 16, some of whom can't even vote.
How many of you watch television at night? Nobody. How do you watch the news then? What app do you use? Do you use news apps?
She was really on form. She's very good at engaging. She talks a lot about her own personal life. She talks about her kids, her sisters, how she had to share a room with four friends on Erasmus, and what a life-changing experience that was for her. She gave a lot of kind of uplifting, morale-boosting kind of anecdotes. So her message to these young people was kind of, don't give up, keep fighting. She also talked about facing a lot of kind of harassment online.
Online hostility has reached an unprecedented high. It is difficult to be in politics. It is much more difficult to be a woman in politics.
It felt to me, and I spoke to the kids afterwards, I mean, it was kind of a bit of a self-selecting school of people. She did get questions about how can we connect more with people in rural areas. Obviously, Romania is a country with a huge, you know, rural hinterland. But a lot of these kids were from schools which are already doing programs to kind of be ambassadors for the EU. So it's probably quite a small clique of people that were in the room. One of the kids that I spoke to afterwards was actually quite pessimistic about how far this message of please go out and vote, because it wasn't really a political message that Metsola was giving, and I think that's to her credit.
The people that live in the countryside won't hear her message. Nobody that lives outside of the big cities, they won't hear her message. They won't vote and this won't change.
She was really just being this ambassadorial figure for the elections and saying, can we get people out to vote?
It's really interesting to contrast her very positive, just like, go out and vote no matter who you're voting for tone, whereas we're really starting to see the opposite play out here. This is the time in the campaign season when people stop being polite and start getting real. So we were talking to a press person, and they made the point that they had read your article about the Party of European Socialists Congress, and they thought that the socialists had spent the whole time punching the EPP and the conservatives, when you pretty fairly said, look, that's the way journalists, and especially Politico, write about stuff.
But also, it should be said that Schmidt had a couple of strong lines, you know, smashing the EPP in his victory speech in Rome. So, you know, accusing them of cozying up to the far right. People may be writing off this election as a fake election where the stakes are very low and it's all kind of cooked up months in advance. But, you know, there are some signs of life in it still. And I think for the neutral observer, I think there's still some chance that we could have a bit of a feisty contest on our hands.
Cool. Well, a feisty contest is not what we're going to get tomorrow on day two, but we will be here anyway.
So von der Leyen spent most of today behind the scenes, schmoozing with the party faithful. Tomorrow will mark the official beginning of her public campaign. So her success at becoming the lead candidate is certain. But is anyone, like, genuinely excited about this, Spitz? We'll ask the awkward questions on day two. Stay with us.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Day two, the coronation. If yesterday was all about the party platform, today is about one person, Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
What an honor for me to stand here and to ask for your support.
So I'm walking to the venue to get a start on day two. I'm a little grumpy because my Uber driver, at my request, took a wrong turn. I made a bad call. And so I kind of got to walk a bit further to get to the official entrance that I'm allowed to use. It's a bit cold. And, you know, but at the same time, for day two of the EPP Congress, we are accepting a very warm reception for Commission President Ursula von der Leyen as she gets officially coronated. And we're expecting a lot of support for her. Only a few little pockets of dissent from delegates from France and Slovenia. And our goal for the day is to see how enthusiastic people genuinely are about their one and only lead candidate contender and what they're hoping to hear from her. One big question we heard over and over again was whether or not von der Leyen was going to actually campaign, like go around Europe and meet regular people and kiss babies and whatnot. So remember that in 2019, she didn't have to do this because she was, controversially, parachuted into the job by EU leaders. I asked EPP Secretary General Thanasis Bakolas about her campaign plans.
Is President von der Leyen going to campaign?
Absolutely.
What's it going to look like?
I think our lead candidate will campaign actively. She has a record. She's been commission president for 5 years. That puts her in a very advantageous position because I think it was a good commission. It did a lot of good things, and she's going to defend these policies. And she should, and she will. And we'll see what the campaign looks like right after the Congress, when she's officially lead candidate. But what I know at this point is she will campaign actively.
If she's going to campaign on the manifesto, she has to reverse some of her legacy, no?
No, I think wait and see. I think there's dogmatism and pragmatism. The EPP is all about pragmatism. Let's take the Green Deal. If you want the Green Deal to work, to really work, we need people to support it. And von der Leyen herself in her State of the Union speech in Strasbourg last September said, we cannot leave anybody behind. So the Green Deal must be connected to our economic policies. It must be connected to prosperity, on the one hand, the prosperity of our citizens, and the competitiveness of our economy. Because if it's not, it's not going to work. You know, it's not going to work for farmers, it's not going to work for other interest groups. So this is very important.
We heard the same message from European Parliament President Roberta Metsola. Dirty little secret, after spotting her on the plane, I kind of ended up in some part of the venue that I wasn't supposed to be in, don't know how that happened, and made a shameless approach. Finally, I finally got you.
Outside the toilet.
That's,
how are you?
You know, that's a key reporting skill.
You have already been kind of out campaigning just to kind of get out the vote, get young people excited. What would you like to see Ursula von der Leyen do as far as campaigning?
Well, I would say be everywhere. If there's one thing we have learned, you know, being in Brussels is not enough. Talking from podiums is not enough. We need to be in cities and villages and towns. That's what I'm trying to do. And just explain. We still have to explain what Europe is and how what we are doing matters for the citizens we're facing. And there are real concerns, real frustrations. And in order for us to prevent those people from finding comfort in the fringes, we need to convince them. And we can only convince them by talking to them, like saying, things could have been done better, but we'll do better next time.
It was a variation on a theme that we heard from other members of the European Parliament. Here's Petri Sarvama from Finland. Today is the big day for Ursula von der Leyen. Are you looking forward to or hoping that she'll say anything in particular in any of her two speeches that she has scheduled at this point?
I am hoping, actually. We should hear a very determined and sort of like forward-looking speech, because the times that we are in and what we are entering is just going to be more and more difficult. It's not getting easier. So,
do you get the sense that people are really enthusiastic about her, or she's just kind of the obvious choice to keep the incumbent in?
I think in these times it's also important that we have continuity in the leadership now. This is not a time to start anew. Von der Leyen has bettered her game year by year. From when she started. And so now we need the experience, and she has the experience. This is not a time to rock the boat.
What advice would you have for her for the coming months as far as campaigning?
Get out there and shake the hands. This is what it should be. And I really hope, actually, that she would really go out there. I mean, this is what it's all about.
Heading into her big moment, support for von der Leyen isn't absolute, even among members of the EPP. Former Slovenian Prime Minister Janez Janša and his party oppose her nomination, and so do the French Republicans, who criticize that she's too green, too technocratic, and too close to a certain French president, Emmanuel Macron. Ouch. Eddie and I caught up with one of these members in the Congress hall, Michel Barnier, France's former minister for Europe and the EU's Brexit negotiator.
Oh, I just explained why the French delegation of the EPP has some reserve for this candidacy of Mrs. Van der Leyen, because she made the choice to take part to a meeting, an electoral meeting of our opponent in France, supporting the list and the campaign of President Macron and his friends. So it seems to us that it was not loyal. It's difficult now to ask us to support this candidacy, because she did the contrary in France. Huh? It's so simple.
Yeah. We were curious if the French Republican resistance was rubbing off on others. Here's Eddie speaking to Finnish Prime Minister Petteri Orpo.
So on von der Leyen, I mean, some people, the French delegation, are not going to vote for her. Les deux publics, they don't like her. The Austrians have some problems, that the Janša party doesn't like her. But overall, she's very popular. But do you feel like she's truly an EPP president? She's been the face of the Green Deal, she's been very climate.
Yes. I think that she has shown very strong leadership, especially on COVID and Ukraine. And I strongly support her. I think that she understood the mistakes they have done.
Such as?
Such as the Green Deal is okay, but the devil's has been in the details. Too much details, too much bureaucracy, too much regulation. And I think that it is important that in the next commission, we must very carefully think the commissioners, the portfolios, and what is most important for European Union, the future European Union, and find the right person. We have to find the people who have competence and political power to push the reforms we need forward.
And while others weren't quite as blatant in their opposition to von der Leyen, it wasn't as if everything was smooth sailing, even among her own party of the Christian Democrats in Germany. This is Peter Liese, an MEP from von der Leyen's CDU party.
How are you feeling about nominating von der Leyen?
I think it's great. She did a very good job.
Yeah.
So in particular on health through the pandemic and even before with the cancer plan. I also think she's the right person in difficult times. She helped to stick together in the crisis with Ukraine. So I'm really supporting her. And those conservatives in my party that are not completely happy, you know, we have to see with the alternative. There are some in EPP and some in CDU that are not completely convinced, but if you look at the alternatives, would be Nicolas Schmidt for the president, and for the German commissioner would be a Green. So In particular for conservatives, that would be not a good choice.
Okay. Some people say that she's a very green president. I mean, she may be too green. You know, she's been the face of the Green Deal. She's had the climate law and all these very, you know, things which now are being looked at again and being reconsidered. You know, do you think maybe she's a bit too green friendly?
No, I support her that we should stick to the Green Deal. But we all have to see, and also the Greens have to understand, that when we are in a war and when the economy is going down, we need to put more emphasis on growth, because otherwise the climate targets will not be supported by citizens.
Seems to me like almost like von der Leyen is acting like an opposition party in some ways, even though she's been in government. Maybe it's because the CDU is in opposition in Germany that she's now kind of going back on a lot of her own thinking and changing course quite a lot.
We are definitely in government in Europe. We have the president of the European Commission. And in contrast to 3-4 years ago, we have now the most leaders in the member states. And that, of course, changes the picture.
Yeah.
And you can do a completely different policy when you have an EPP majority in contrast to a majority that is not EPP. So yeah. She had to deal with the majorities that were existing in the beginning. That will change. That's why also the policy can change.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Others we should note were definitely more enthusiastic about von der Leyen as their lead candidate. We caught up with Adina Valean. She's the current commissioner for transport from Romania.
You know, we're going to see Commission and President Ursula von der Leyen nominated as the Spitzenkandidat. You've gotten to work with her a bit on the commission. You know, what have you learned about her, and what do you think is going to kind of help her in this campaign?
I think she's a true leader. She thinks like one. She acts like one. She's a strong-minded person. She's not shy from challenges. And we have seen that. She was trying to do her best, and I think she succeeded during many successive crises. So I enjoyed working with her, and I wish her best of luck for the new term.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the last call, so please take your seats. The EPP's Congress of 2024 is about to begin. Thank you.
So we're about 10 minutes until the formal program on day two starts, and I'm just hanging back in the press area for a few minutes longer to let my phone charge. I'm watching on these big screens here Commission President Ursula von der Leyen glad handing, taking photos on the main plenary floor. She's all smiles, wearing kind of a white, glimmery, rose gold sort of blazer. Yesterday was kind of about the manifesto, is about the more kind of like policy insider stuff. Today is the von der Leyen's day. We didn't really see her yesterday, and now already, first thing in the morning, she's out in the main area. And so with that, I'm going to make my way over there. So there was definitely more buzz in the auditorium today than yesterday, but people still seem to be pretty blasé about von der Leyen's actual speech. I found myself feeling weirdly naive. This was supposed to be the main event, and the moment when the straight-laced administrator finally delivered a political barnstormer. But everyone else seemed to know this would just be another dry recitation, and the main floor was filled with people milling around, gabbing away like they did for all the minor party execs and small country prime ministers who spoke before. So this is von der Leyen, the first of von der Leyen's two speeches today, the first as the sole candidate to be Spitzenkandidat, and then since we presume that she will indeed be elected, she'll give another one after the results. We're watching videos of her giving bisous to Zelensky, meeting Joe Biden at the White House, and a helicopter touring damage from severe weather events, speaking in front of the European Parliament.
What an honor for me to stand here and to ask for your support. We, the EPP, have always stood for the values that unite us. And let there be no doubt what's at stake in this elections. Our peaceful and united Europe is being challenged like never before by populists, by nationalists, by demagogues, whether it's the far right or it's the far left. They want to trample on our values. And we, the EPP, will never let that happen. Just look at the last 5 years. For your trust and your support. And it is the honor of a lifetime to serve our Europe. Let's fight for our Europe. Long live Europe. Thank you.
So the voting has just opened. Spanish opposition leader of the Partido Popular, Alberto Feijóo, is giving his remarks in Spanish, but people are heading to stage right to start voting.
As you know, voting opened at 10:15. It is 11:11. We have until 11:45. I encourage you all to vote, to cast your votes.
As the voting group got underway, Eddie and I tried to get a sense of how it was going.
Can I ask, how did you vote? You're like the youngest person who's probably ever voted in the EPP.
I voted for Ursula von der Leyen.
You're a party member?
I am.
CDU?
Yes.
Why did you vote for her?
Oh, she's doing quite a good job, I'd say, especially in these crises. He's having a steady hand, staying calm, and you need somebody like that.
Commissioner, Ms. Kyriakides, sorry, I'm Eddie from Politico. Do you have 2 minutes? I'd like to know how you voted. It's a secret.
Voted very positively.
Mr. Varadkar.
This is Leo Varadkar, the Irish Prime Minister and one of 12 leaders from the EPP around the European Council table.
We're going to run a very good campaign for the European elections. In reality, European elections in Ireland anyway tend to focus on the candidates on the ballot paper rather than the party or the European party. But certainly both Ursula and Roberta, I expect, will hopefully pay this to Ireland at some point. If not one of them, certainly. Mm. No, both of them certainly will.
I also caught up with Lydia Pereira, a Portuguese MEP and the president of Youth EPP. What do you want to see from Commission President and this specifically candidate von der Leyen over the next few months?
Well, I want her to be what she is and who she is. She's very open, very prepared. She's very easygoing with people. President von der Leyen, all the time that the young people have requested her something, so the youth of EPP, she delivered. And so I trust her that she's going to deliver again. And that's what I expect from her.
And does she need to be out delivering that message, or can she convey this stability message by just being the commission president and continuing to do her
thing? She has to go and she has to campaign, and people have to know her. People have to understand that they vote for the EPP national parties. They are voting for her to become president of the commission. And that message has to come across. The people have to understand this connection, and it's a powerful connection. And the figure of von der Leyen is of a strong woman, a kind person as well, that has been delivering. And people have to know that. She has to tell that to people.
We wrapped up our conversation just as the only moment of any real suspense arrived. We always knew that von der Leyen was going to win this little election of one, but the big question was always what proportion of delegates would actually back her.
Now I call our president of the voting committee and Vice President Esther De Lange to please explain the process and announce the results for the EPP lead candidate for the presidency of the European Commission.
Thank you. So, I'll give you the numbers. The votes cast today were 499. Invalid and blank votes, 10. That means we had 489 valid votes, of which, a very round number, 400 yes, 89 no, and that means that is elected, resoundingly, Ursula von der Leyen. Congratulations.
Okay, but like, was it really that resounding? Nearly one in five delegates who cast a ballot in the secret vote voted against her. Perceptions of the EPP's unity were further muddied by confusion about how many of the party's eligible voters skipped the election altogether. Ultimately, though, her nomination as the EPP's lead candidate was never in doubt. One attendee, casually walking out of the room after the announcement, ironically remarked, "Crazy."
Thank you, my friends. Thank you, my dear EPP. It's wonderful to be here and to have your trust and to feel your determination. We have now 90 days to go till election day. Now it's time to get out there and convince the people to win their hearts and to win their minds. And my dear friends, this is only possible if we are a great team. Let's win this election. Let's be the strongest party in this European elections.
And just like that, Ursula's campaign roadshow officially begins, whether she wants to actually hit the road or not.
Dear colleagues, this was the powerhouse of Europe. Thank you so much. I'm closing officially the Congress 2024.
So I'm standing here one last time with Eddie Wax. The conference center has pretty much cleared out. They have removed the porta potties that were available to the press. So we're not allowed to use the real ones now. It's very nice. And Eddie, stepping back, did the EPP Congress achieve what its planners set out to achieve?
I think it was a show of force, a show of intent, confident sort of muscle flexing exercise for the center-right political party here. I think maybe some people were surprised by how many people actually voted directly against Ursula von der Leyen, because in the last few days we've only really been hearing about sort of handful of votes from the French Républicain and Janez Janša's Slovenian party. So it was a secret ballot, so we may never know exactly who voted against Ursula von der Leyen, but it's clear that there are some sort of tremors in the EPP of people not particularly happy with her. They may see that she's kind of doing a bit of a volte-face now and becoming more classically Christian Democrat candidate, whereas really she's run the commission in a bit of a different way. Yeah, I think they probably are pretty much happy with how it passed off. But there is that sort of underlying threat, that simmering sort of tension there. And I think that will be on von der Leyen's mind. I imagine it will be.
We're hearing just some whispers so far that there was also some anger about how the manifesto writing process played out. But at the same time, I was asking people if they wanted her to just sort of be the sort of regal incumbent, just keep doing her commissioner thing, campaign, and... You know, the answer I heard was they wanted to get out there. How about you?
They kind of have to say that, right? They have to embrace, at least to a certain extent, this Spitzenkandidat idea, this lead candidate model. But I was also hearing from leaders and party activists saying that ultimately these are 27 separate national elections. And, you know, ultimately, while von der Leyen might be important here in Bucharest and Rome as a kind of lead candidate, how much is she really going to weigh on the minds of voters? I mean, I think people are aware that these are really campaigns where national issues are going to be on the ballot and local politicians, national politicians are going to matter more. But I think this is the big open question now as we look down the barrel of the next 3 months heading towards these elections in June. How much is she going to commit to campaigning? How much is she really going to be embracing this role as the face of the European People's Party, knowing that the more she does, the more difficult she makes it for herself, ultimately, when/if, but let's face it, really, when she becomes president of the European Commission again. And she'll then have to kind of row back, probably, from a lot of these policies and a lot of these positions that her family here are taking on migration, on farming, on the Green Deal, on competitiveness.
So while we wait to hear how much Ursula von der Leyen commits to campaigning, I'm going to commit to sleeping. I hope you get some rest too. Thanks for joining me here, Eddie.
Thanks, Sarah. See you back in Brussels.
We hope you've enjoyed this little audio diary, taking you inside a party Congress ahead of the European election in June. Keep tuning in to EU Confidential as your go-to podcast for all things EU election. And do be sure to follow the podcast wherever you're listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a nice rating and review. I'm Sarah Wheaton in Bucharest. A big shout out to my Politico and Crime, Eddie Wax, and to our producers, Christina Gonzalez and Diana Steris. See you next week. And just as a final note, to show how desolate things have gotten here, a stray cat has now gotten into the press center and is crawling on tables, looking at our notes, maybe finding some leftover coffee.
Apparently it's called Ursula von der Leyen.
No!
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.